Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. It may be the last full day before the Congress of the United States moves decisively to lift the debt ceiling and lift the atmosphere of crisis and to reopen the government of the United States. But in the midst of doing all of that, even once they are done with this immediate crisis, there's going to be a lot of effort on the part of everyone in every political faction, in every party, in every corner of the country to try to define where do we go from here? How do we build the kind of coalition that you need to build in order to win elections? And in that context, there's this interesting piece, and it really deserves more attention. We will talk about it in greater depth. It's a piece from Esquire magazine based on an unusually large poll. It's a poll of 2,500 people. And they actually define what they call the big vital center of America. It's an actual majority of Americans who seem to have strong agreement on a whole series of issues. And guess what? One of the things about which that great group of Americans agrees is climate change. They don't think it's a crisis. They don't think it threatens civilization as we know it. They disagree with Al Gore that we're all doomed unless we put him in charge of managing the future economy of the world and of the United States. So given that climate change skepticism, why is it that that seems to go against what is called the scientific consensus? What does scientific consensus mean anyway? And what, if anything, should we really be doing about climate change or climate non-change? To address that, we have our Science and Culture Hour with my friend, Dr. Stephen Meyer. He is the director of the Center for Science and Culture at Discovery Institute. He is the author of the massively successful new bestseller, Darwin's Doubt, which I heartily recommend. And we're also joined from London by a very distinguished guest. Christopher Booker is a columnist for The Telegraph. He is author of The Real Global Warming Disaster, which was hailed by the London Observer as the definitive climate skeptics manual. Mr. Booker, can you hear us across the pond?
Michael, yes, I certainly can, yeah.
Thank you so very much. And Stephen, first of all, are you surprised to see that Americans in the center, people who are defined the great American middle class, middle of the country, middle road people, have big doubts about the climate change alarmists?
Because a lot of scientists have doubts, and the word has leaked out through lots of alternative media sources that the alleged consensus is not really reflective of the center of scientific opinion about this issue either.
Christopher, you've written about this in Great Britain. Is it the same assumption in Great Britain? Here we are told repeatedly by people like Vice President Gore, former Vice President Gore, thank God, that we're told that to be skeptical of the most alarmist talk about climate change is the moral equivalent of Holocaust denial. Have you gotten that over in Britain?
Yeah, or faking the first moon landing and all the rest of it. Yeah, flat earthism. I wrote a book a few years ago. In fact, I've written two books on this subject because for a long time I didn't take a huge amount of notice about it because I was writing about lots of other things. But it gradually became apparent in the first decade of this century that we had a very odd situation whereby the so-called scientific consensus, which was driven by this thing called the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, that there really was no consensus and that, in fact, the whole thing was beginning to fall apart because they'd made a whole lot of predictions with the aid of computer models, which was simply not happening, not being borne out by what was going on in the real world. And you've got a lot of very distinguished scientists piling in from outside the consensus saying, hang on, these guys are following one particular obsessive track. They're saying that because carbon dioxide is going up in the atmosphere, this is going to lead to all sorts of global warming and catastrophe. And it simply wasn't happening. The reason why I called my book The Real Global Warming Disaster was that just as the science was falling apart, or at least the idea that there was this consensus in favor of global warming, just as the science was cracking up, the politicians, particularly, I have to say, in Europe, to a considerable extent, your guys in the States, I mean, Kerry and Obama in 2008 were totally sold on it. But we were seeing this piling up of this vast regulatory response to a scare which was turning out not to exist.
1-800-955-1776. This, of course, has been a criticism from a lot of skeptics on climate change for a long time, was that this has been used as an excuse to advance the big government agenda, which has traditionally been at the very heart of the left-wing worldview. Stephen, if you were to talk about the differences that separate the climate change consensus, so-called, and the skeptics, what's the essence, what's the nub of this dispute?
Well, it's really about whether or not there is much global warming, how much is in play. There's a nice brief thumbnail history of climate change or warming that I think ordinary folks should have in their hip pocket when they get into this discussion. From 1890 to 1990, there was about a half a degree Celsius rise in the mean global temperature. The decade of the 90s was pretty warm. Another tenth of a degree was added during that time. Since 1998 to the present, there has been no appreciable warming. And yet we've put across the globe about 100 billion tons of new carbon dioxide into the atmosphere during that time. And so all these, as Christopher was saying, all these predictions about what should happen given the models that scientists have made have actually not come true. And that casts doubt on the predictions they make out into the future. Because if you can't explain the facts that have already happened, if you can't retrodict or explain after the fact, it's going to be even more difficult to predict the future. So,
Christopher, how far off were some of the gloom and doom predictions? Oh, say about the year 2010 or the year 2013. How far off were they?
Well, what we can look at now is we've had five reports from this thing called the IPCC, this UN panel. And they have all contained a range of predictions about what was going to happen to world temperatures based on their computer models. And their computer models were programmed to believe that as CO2 went up, so would the temperatures. What we can now see is over the last 15 or 16 years, we can see that all the projections about how the temperature was meant to rise are way ahead of what has actually happened, because in fact there hasn't been a very significant warming in the last 15 years. This is only part of the story, but it's a very important part of the story, because the more you study what the IPCC has been up to for the last 20 years, the more you see that everything it does is based on this one assumption that CO2 goes up, so must temperatures go up, and all those computer models were programmed to believe that, and the computer models are simply being shown to be totally wrong.
This is garbage in, garbage out, is what you're saying.
It's a classic example of exactly what you say.
Fine, you put in all this information about increased CO2, but it doesn't result in increases in climate. Stephen, aren't you concerned about the moose? Did you see the New York Times science section this morning?
I'm not concerned about the moose.
No, wait. This is terrible. I love moose. Moose are in many ways my favorite animal and have been for years and years. And the New York Times science section has this alarming story about the moose in Minnesota who are dying off at an unprecedented rate. And they say that the moose die off as a consequence of global warming. Do you think that that might be true?
I think the problem with this whole debate is actually assigning causation. We had the same thing about the polar bears a few years ago.
They show a dying moose. It's sad.
I know. It's very sad, Michael. I love your mooses, too. And there's the Mariner moose here in Seattle that we all love. But back to just that short sketch of the history of climate change. Even the half a degree rise in 100 years did not establish that humans were the cause of the rise. Most of the increase in greenhouse gases, human-produced greenhouse gases, came before World War II. Most of the increase in that one-half-degree increase occurred before World War II. So the thing didn't correlate. And so assigning causation has been very difficult.
Stephen, you're saying that they can't blame this on the House Republicans?
Well, they are people, so maybe we can blame it on them, too. I don't know.
We will be right back with Stephen Meyer and Christopher Booker.
You're not
Booker.
Taking this seriously, Michael.
I know. I'm just one of those skeptics who is whistling past the graveyard. Meanwhile, there's actually an impact of the government shutdown that is deeply, deeply alarming some of the global warming alarmists. What is it? Has the government been funding global warming? We'll get to that and more coming up.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show.
Vice President Al Gore, more recently, that's even, I mean, I was suggesting we could go back to An Inconvenient Truth, which is one of the laugh riots of Hollywood history. Actually, if you do go back and watch the film, there are moments where Al Gore is unintentionally hilarious. Al Gore saying that basically a tiny, 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 tiny minority. And we have two leading scientific experts who are members of that minority and proud of it. Christopher Booker is a columnist for the prestigious Telegraph newspaper in Great Britain and author of The Real Global Warming Disaster and many other books. Stephen Meyer is the author of the big bestseller Darwin's Doubt, The Explosive Origin of Animal Life and the Case for Intelligent Design. Stephen is, of course, the director of Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Okay, let me get something clear. Christopher, do you believe that the Earth is flat?
It certainly looks that way, doesn't it?
And what about the moon landing? Do you think that Scott Carpenter, do you think that the astronauts really did set foot on the moon, or was this staged in Area 51?
Yes, this is terribly sad, isn't it? You see, what my book was about, what I tried to do was to get the history of this whole thing. Where did it come from? And when you actually trace over the last sort of 30 years, you see how this great scare of over global warming developed. It developed amazingly quickly, and it reached its peak of hysteria around the years 2004, 5, 6, i.e. the time when dear old Al Gore was making that ghastly film. And
winning the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, isn't it wonderful? And so did the European Union.
Yeah, so did Yasser Arafat,
and so did
but we won't
Mr.
go
Obama,
there.
Your yeah. great president.
That's right.
And look, 2 weeks after he'd become president, how much peace had he created in that space of time?
Let's create some peace by going to some eager callers. 1-800-955-1776. John in Phoenix, Arizona, you're on the Michael Medved Show with Christopher Booker and Stephen Meyer.
Hey, thanks, Michael. How you doing?
Doing well.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm just kind of interested in hearing from both guests today, because I'm, as a person who's a skeptic myself, kind of on the fence about global warming, just because there's so much conflicting information, you're not really sure which one to go with. So I'm just wondering, how do they account for the shrinking polar caps if, you know, global warming is a scare and it's not really happening? What's causing that to occur?
Stephen,
on this one, Michael?
Yes, go ahead, Christopher, go.
I was very struck by our friend from Arizona saying polar caps, plural, because if he actually looks at the figures, he will see that whatever has happened to Arctic ice, and that's a very interesting question.
That's the North Pole, of course.
If you look at the Antarctic as well, you see that we're actually slightly above the average for the last 30 years, because the Antarctic ice cover has been growing. The Arctic ice has been going down a bit for particular reasons. And what we're talking about here is global warming. We're not talking about Arctic warming. Actually, air temperatures in the Arctic have fallen over the last 2 or 3 years. There are particular reasons why the Arctic ice cover has been shrinking a bit, not catastrophically. And the melt this year, this summer, which it always melts in the summer, and then, of course, it grows again in the winter, was the lowest degree of melt for the last 7 years.
Stephen?
There's been a huge panic over this Arctic ice, and the polar bears, of course, are very much part of that. And actually, the trouble is that the people who believe that and who get very excited about it haven't got anything like the proper overall picture of what is happening, either to Arctic ice or the Antarctic ice or to anything else.
Okay, now the Antarctic ice, when we're talking about the South Pole, that ice cap has been growing dramatically, hasn't it, Stephen?
Yes, it has. And one other thing that's worth noting is that the 2007 prediction was for a zero ice Arctic summer by 2013. And that's just a 6-year prediction, but these predictions have been so widely variant.
Zero ice, that there would be no polar ice cap anymore?
And these predictions are so widely at variance with the actual facts that they really seriously cast doubt on the accuracy of these models going out over the course of the century.
Or the sanity of the people who make such predictions. By the way, one of the things that, and this does tie to the stories of the day, They just announced today that there is a big federal research program going on in the Antarctic right now. And the baby seals and the penguins and everyone will be terribly disappointed. It's been canceled because the government shut down. And they're very worried that the government won't be able to start up again and they won't go back to the research in the Antarctic. Okay, the reason I assume that President Obama is only too happy to cancel this research is precisely because it reveals the expansion of the ice cover in the Antarctic.
Well, and in addition to the facts being at variance with the consensus, it's really important to note how many scientists there are who are skeptics of the alleged consensus view. There's a website with an environmental scientist in Portland, Art Robinson. It's called petitionproject.org. He has 31,000 scientists of bachelor's, master's, and PhD level scientists who have signed a petition protesting.
And these are not PhDs in art history or theology.
These are in relevant fields, right. And they're skeptical about global warming. And then Christopher and I were at a conference, a private conference a couple years ago, and it was a conference of Darwin skeptics and global warming skeptics meeting together. And we found that there were a lot of the same sociological dynamics in these two debates to suppress dissent in order to advance an ideology. But
we'll get to that ideology in just a moment. Let's go quickly to Chuck in Sammamish, Washington. Chuck, you're on the Michael Medved Show with Christopher and Stephen.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey.
I wanted to talk with you or ask you about your view on some recent articles that have appeared in one of our local rags concerning the alarming rate of the increase in ocean level and ocean acidity and how that would affect us going forward in marine life and the surface waters, the mollusks, the coral, et cetera.
Christopher?
Yeah, well, there are a whole lot of basic points which the people who want to get hysterical about global warming keep on making.
Okay, let's get to those points in just a moment. Because,
right, well, one of them is the acidification of the oceans, which is just...
Okay, we will get to that in just a moment. Do we need to give up our oceanfront homes for fear that they're going to be engulfed by a dramatic rise in the water? What are we anticipating in the next century? 10 feet? 20 feet? 30 feet? We will get to that and more with Christopher and Stephen, Science and Culture Hour on The Medved Show.
The Michael Medved Show.
34 minutes after the hour on The Medved Show, where you can save 15% or even more on car insurance with Geico. Just go to geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. And the only hard part is figuring out which way is even easier. And it's easy to see why lots of people are confused by lots of different information that comes out there about the rise in sea levels and other aspects of climate change. I'm sorry to have interrupted you, Christopher. We're speaking with Christopher Booker, who is a columnist for the Telegraph newspaper in Great Britain. Christopher, so what are we looking toward? Are we looking toward a rise in sea levels that's going to engulf all cities anywhere near the coast, a rise in sea levels of 10, 20, 30 feet over the next 5 or 10 years?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd put money on it. No, just slightly wide note from what Steve was saying earlier, about what you have to look at here, it's no good going back even 100 years. You've got to go back... Well, you've got to go back thousands of years to see what's been happening to global temperatures, and you've in particular got to look at what's been happening in the last 200 years. Because we had 3 or 4 centuries when the USA was young, in fact, even before it was born, when we had a thing called the Little Ice Age, which was when global temperatures did drop quite very catastrophically. We weren't in a mega ice age, but since about 1800... global temperatures have been, well, not steadily, but they've been rising in sort of little jumps and then they go back again. And you've got to look at it in the wider perspective, because what we're looking at here is the latest little bit of rise in temperatures, which has happened several times before. In fact, in the first half of the 20th century, temperatures rose no faster than they've been doing in the last 30 years. And now, as we know, they've actually stopped rising significantly.
Okay, and this is not in doubt. This is not, this is,
None
what
of
you're
is
saying
in
is...
Doubt. This is all completely
this is factual
fact, yeah.
Okay, what struck me, and I'm sure, Stephen, either you or Christopher can satisfy me on this. I remember reading in the new UN report that was covered with such alarming headlines everywhere. They were predicting that by the end of the century, in other words, in 87 years from now, a long time, that the ocean level is likely to go up. It's about a foot, isn't it?
About a meter.
Okay, it's a meter, but and that's not their worst case scenario. Their worst case scenario is something like that.
I think their range is between 1 and 3 feet.
So it's between 1 and 3 feet. The worst case scenario is 3 feet, yeah. and it's more likely to be like a foot or a foot and a half. And does that imperil civilization as we know it, Stephen?
I'm not really sure about that. I'm just so skeptical about the prediction itself. Remember, these are the same people that have been unable to account for the cessation of temperature rise over the last 15 years. Their models would predict a very big increase based on the amount of CO2 that's been put into the atmosphere, and yet we're at a point where there's been no appreciable rise. So the models are based on a lot of assumptions beyond just the obvious thing that CO2 in a closed environment, all other things being equal, will cause temperature to rise. You've got other mitigating factors that move in the other direction. All these models assume that the presence of water vapor would have a compounding effect on the presence of the CO2 to accelerate temperature rise, and that doesn't seem to be true. So
let's go to Doug in Idaho Falls, Idaho. You're on the Michael Medved Show with Christopher Booker and Stephen Meyer.
Good afternoon, sirs.
Hey.
I guess one of the problems your guy that talked to me about coming in here, I know nothing about Al Gore or any of that. I've talked to some of our scientists at Idaho State University and University of Idaho and read the oceans are rising. They're getting warmer. The poles are melting. I've lost lots and lots of ice up there.
One pole. The other one is growing, but go ahead.
I don't know where you get your facts, and I don't know where I get mine. I'm neutral on the thing. I just know that I'm 85 years old, and this country and Idaho out here is a hell of a lot warmer than it was even 30 or 40 years ago, and I mean a lot warmer.
Okay, hold on for a second. Stephen Meyer wanted to hang on. Stephen, quick response.
Well, I just want to say this is perfectly illustrative of why there is a debate, a controversy about this. Remember, Al Gore is saying there's no controversy. If you don't accept this alleged consensus, then you're a denier. But, you know, we have this huge group of scientists that I mentioned earlier. You've got people like Edward Teller, Dick Linson at MIT, Will Happer at Princeton, Sally Baliunas at Harvard, Fred Singer at University of Virginia. The list goes on of prominent scientists who are skeptical.
And wait, Doug, stay on the line, okay? And we will work on posting right up at our website some sources for you so you can check and be reassured that, no, the southern ice cap is not melting. We'll be right back.
Michael Medved. Or click on the science and culture banner at michaelmedved.com.
And later this evening, if you go up to the science and culture banner at michaelmedved.com, you'll find all kinds of information that'll make you feel better about Antarctica, despite the fact that federal funding for investigations of Antarctica has been suspended because of the government shutdown. So, Doug, are you still with us in beautiful Idaho Falls, Idaho?
Yes, and could I make one more comment? And then I'd rather listen on the ears than on a cell phone.
Sure.
There's a difference between the North Pole and the South Pole. The North Pole is all water, and the South Pole is permafrost land. So the circulation of warmer water slowly getting warmer, would obviously melt the North Pole faster than the South Pole. But even our Glacier National Park and glaciers all around the world are actually melting, and I'm not arguing the point other than willing to listen and learn, but it's pretty hard to argue against how many glaciers are melting and the very fact that the pole is sitting underwater means the water is getting warmer, and that's the reason the pole is melting faster.
Okay, Christopher?
Yeah, I'm really sad that we're getting bogged down in this argument about the Antarctic and the Arctic, because it really has been going on for a long time, and there are huge amounts of facts, but also there's an awful lot that genuine scientists who've been studying these things have been saying about the Arctic. You see, you can't keep on focusing on this CO2 pushing up temperatures. Arctic air temperatures have actually been falling in the last 3 years. If you talk to people who've actually gone and studied the thing on the ground instead of just relying on computer models, you'll find that the major factor, reason why the Arctic water is warming, is because there's a lot of warm water coming in from the Pacific and the Atlantic. And that, combined with winds, is creating a warmer water, which melts the ice, as opposed to the air, which you'd expect if we're talking about global warming. The air should be getting warmer, but in fact it's getting colder. So I'm sorry that our friend from Idaho is You know, he said he was relying on things he'd been told by people from Idaho University. Well, the question you always have to ask in this whole great debate about global warming is, are these people actually looking at the hard evidence of what's happening, or are they just believing what they've been told by someone else? And if you go and talk to someone from Idaho University, I'm sure they will tell you what the global warming orthodoxy will tell them. It's all to do with CO2 and the world is warming. I'm sorry, I think we're getting rather lost on this one rather narrow point.
Let me ask about a broader point here, Stephen, which is it's imputed that it's immoral. It's not just stupid. It's immoral, it's wrong, it's unethical to question the scientific consensus, in quotes, on climate change. But the same kind of effort is put on the issue of a random Darwinian evolution. The idea that it's not just wrong, it's immoral, it's somehow despicable, it's lower than pond scum to discuss questions to Darwinism at all. What's the similarity? Why is it that both these two things are held as such items of profound faith that can't even be questioned?
Are scientific issues that involve a deeper, where there's a deeper ideological issue in play. In the case of Darwinian evolution, it's the great issue. Is life the result of an undirected, unguided, purely materialistic process, or did a designing intelligence or creator of some kind play a role? The scientific issue about whether Darwinism is true or not strikes right to the heart of that issue. And so people who are invested with a strongly materialistic worldview are also going to be invested with defending Darwinism, whatever the facts. And Christopher and I were at an interesting conference with global warming skeptics and Darwin skeptics in attendance. And at the beginning of the conference, each of these groups of scientists had no real affinity to the other. But by the end, they were all saying it's the same sociological dynamics in play in both debates. There's this attempt to use consensus to shut down legitimate scientific dissent in order to propagate an ideology that, in the end, will stand whatever the facts are presented to the adherents of the ideology. And so in the case of the global warming debate, there's also an ideological element, and that is the conviction that we have a global problem and therefore we need a global solution. And if the problem's big enough, then the only type of solution that will do is one which concentrates a huge amount of power in the hands of a few elites, which is something the left has always tried to do because left-wing politics is essentially utopian in character.
Let's go to Diane in Philadelphia. Diane, you're on the Michael Medved Show with Christopher Booker and Stephen Meyer.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and good evening.
Hey.
Over across the pond. In elementary school science, we were taught that the Earth spins on its axis, and that axis, that degree, is not static. To what extent does the tilt of the Earth affect temperature change? Because if the North Pole tilts away from the sun, even as it does just in the general seasons, wouldn't it in fact get colder? And if the tilt changes the other direction, wouldn't it in fact get warmer? Isn't this just a bigger picture astronomically?
Christopher?
Yeah, I think one of the good things that's happened as a result of this great global warming scare is that it actually has encouraged a huge debate going on outside the consensus. And it's been raging all over the place, particularly, I have to say, in the States and in North America and Britain, which has actually led us to see that what drives the climate of the world, and the tilt of the axis is certainly one part of that, but it's one of many, many factors which are simply not being taken account of by this consensus. What we are beginning to realize is just how little we know about what actually shapes the Earth's climate, which, after all, if you look back at over the last million years, has gone through massive ice ages when two-thirds of the world were covered in ice. Why did we suddenly plunge into those ice ages? Why did we come out of them?
What we Flintstone driving in those little cars, yeah?
It's just how little we know, although we're beginning to see some of the factors like the effects of the sun, the effects of ocean currents. All these things are simply, they're incredibly important factors. But
yes, but perhaps even more important than internal combustion engines, which didn't exist at that time. We will be right back with Christopher Booker and Stephen Meyer, the Science and Culture Hour. 55 minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, the Science and Culture Hour with Discovery Institute. If you want to be part of next week's Science and Culture Hour, you can be part of it. Come join us for a live broadcast. We have a few seats left. You have to arrange in advance. to participate. It's lunch and live. There will be a delicious and healthy food available for everybody, and refreshments of all kinds, plus Dr. Stephen Meyer, David Klinghoffer, best-selling author, and me broadcasting live from our headquarters here on the shores of Lake Union in beautiful Seattle. Go to the Science and Culture banner at our website, click on it, and you can sign up to be part of this special first ever live broadcast right here in Seattle with Discovery Institute. Let's go very quickly to Daniel in Chicago. Daniel, you get the last question on this Science and Culture Hour.
Yeah, hi. Great to talk to you, Michael.
Thank you, Daniel.
You know, I was with this since global cooling in the 70s when I was a lad. It got in my Nature magazine. So I've been inoculated against this, and I've been just appalled at the level of bad science. I mean, climate change is a political term, not a science term, and the bad definitions and all the other bad methodology.
Okay, so question?
Well, how is this just overlooked, the just terrible level of ignorance, bad science, and all the rest?
Okay, Christopher Booker.
There are three professions which come very badly out of this greatest scare the world's ever seen. One is my own journalism, which has fallen for the whole scare and displays its ignorance. As the whole scare has been falling apart, it's got worse and worse. Then, of course, we've got the scientists, the particular group of scientists who've been behind the scare, because there are a hell of a lot of others who aren't behind it. And then the third group, unfortunately, is the politicians. And the real problem we have now is that the politicians are the ones who are still pushing the scare, even though the science behind it has been falling apart for the last 10 years.
Stephen.
What interests me about the issue as a philosopher of science is the way that the advocates of the human-caused global warming hypothesis have used consensus as a way to shut down genuine debate. Science advances as scientists debate about how to interpret evidence. And when you have a group of scientists claiming consensus in order to silence other scientists, that's a bad sign. It shuts down the kind of open inquiry we need both in science and in a democratic society.
As stifling debate, shutting down dissent, never a good idea, really. I mean, there are lots of reasons to try to bring this current government shutdown to an end. But you don't do it by closing off disagreement. Why? Because disagreement is at the very heart of freedom of expression, which is an absolute core foundational principle for this greatest nation on God's green earth.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.